This is Will's Band of the Week for February 15th, 2015. Welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Barrett, live in studio.
Hello.
And halfway across the world, Melbourne correspondent, Nicholas.
Hello, good evening, good morning, wherever you are.
Good to have you back, Nicholas.
Yeah, thank you. I kind of feel like I'm one of those salesmen that kind of gets his foot in the door and you can't really get rid of them, even though you're sort of like, no, I don't want to change my telephone plan. So I'm back again to stink up the podcast.
You're going to try to sell the listeners on something again, right?
Yeah.
So we're recording here and it's 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. And in Melbourne, it is...
It's just after 7 a.m. on Sunday morning.
Wow.
17 hours ahead. Yeah.
Yep. So I can tell you Saturday night's a great night. You still got that coming up, guys, but I've lived through Saturday night. It's a good one, so enjoy that when it gets to you. And Sunday morning's looking pretty good as well.
All right.
It's warm here. I know it's cold where you guys are.
Yeah, one thing we don't have to look forward to in the near future is your temperatures. It is very windy and cold here.
Yeah, it's about 5 or 6 degrees.
Fahrenheit
and very windy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, we had the fans on here in the house last night because it was, you know, it's a bit warm, and I've just got a pair of tracksuit pants and bare feet on, and a t-shirt. That's what I'm wearing.
We're kind of jealous.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were just talking before we called you, and Barrett was commenting about how it must be really different to think of like January, February as being the warm months. That's totally backwards for us.
Yeah. I guess it's just kind of what you're used to. But we're kind of getting to the end of our summer now. By March, summer's basically reached the end.
But you've got a temperate climate, right? I mean, even in like July, it's not that cold, is it?
We were talking about this last time, Will, but yeah, nothing compared to what you guys experience. And sometimes, you know, like yesterday, we had a whole lot of rain. So, Melbourne is kind of pretty varied. You know, it can be, you know, like a really hot day, and then the next day, the temperature goes, you know, it's nowhere near as hot. So, it can be kind of up and down, really.
We can just, every time we have you on, we'll spend like half of the podcast talking about the weather. Right.
Yeah, I'm wondering, it's like, God, haven't these guys got anything better to say? You know, that's what the listeners, you know. But it's like,
yeah.
And all, you know, it's just different, isn't it? We're on different sides of the earth. And, let's hope this coffee that I'm halfway through is just going to, like, ignite some incredibly interesting things for me to say rather than, yeah, it's warm over here.
Yeah. I'm sure it's only going to go up from here. It's going to be incredibly insightful. The standard set is so high.
Yeah, we're just warming up.
So we always start with the music news, and I guess there's some music news. A bunch of the American summer music festivals announced their lineups this week, and it's almost like there's this thing where the floodgates open, so one festival announces the list of bands, and then the other ones have to come through. And so there are three music festivals the same weekend I guess Louisville, Kentucky is a little farther away, but there's one mid-July there, and there's the Pitchfork Festival, and then there's this new one that the Bon Iver and National guys put together up in Eau Claire, which is about the same distance as we are from Chicago, only in the sort of opposite direction. All those are going on at the same time. So, and I was commenting about how in our climate here, getting back to the weather, you're sitting in your office or at home or whatever, and you're just kind of freezing and you're looking forward to warm weather. It's kind of nice to think about being out on a hot summer day, right?
Right. Right. So that's kind of selling the tickets.
I think that's
just those notions, you know.
Yeah. Just the thought makes people buy tickets. Is there a festival circuit around Melbourne at all? Like time of year when they have like big concerts with lots of bands that go, span more than a day?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of over our summer, so it kind of, there's still one or two festivals coming up, but probably from the end of the year and particularly the first two or three months, there's quite a few big festivals here. One of them's actually been recently bought by an American company. So even companies overseas are kind of recognizing how much money there is to be made.
Apparently there is.
Seems like there's some cool festivals, and some of them you can, you know, sort of like in sort of slightly kind of country, kind of rural areas. So you go out there and you camp for two or three days, or some of them are just big rock festivals over a couple, you know, over one or two days. Here in Melbourne, there's lots of full on kind of like dance music, like electronic festivals where you can go camping in the bush. And people are definitely into festivals, and I guess now is the kind of time that it happens because it's warm weather, nice weather to be outside.
Yeah, makes sense.
I feel like all that stuff, and we'll probably touch on this a little bit about when I talk about the gig that I went to. I feel like all that stuff, you know, like I kind of used to do that stuff when I was younger, and it's like now I don't ever really get around to doing it. So I just hear about these festivals, and then I'll bump into someone who's gone to this festival, and sometimes in my mind I think, yeah, it's weird, isn't it? I never even consider going to one of these festivals anymore, but maybe that'll change.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have until Grant got interested in it. Of course, Barrett, you and Chris have gone to a couple. I think you guys went to Pitchfork before I ever did.
Pitchfork about 2 years ago, and I was sort of in the same boat where I had little interest in doing that before I went. I did enjoy that one because it was kind of smaller and easy logistically to get from one area to the next, and you know, get something to drink and use the bathroom and stuff. So I thought that was a good one. I'm not sure that I would enjoy like a full-on Lollapalooza-style festival based on, you know, hearing your description of going with Grant, like, was it like 4 years ago or so?
Yeah, yeah. I think it was 90,000 people.
Yeah.
So that's pretty big. But, even you spread it among three stages, you know, still, like, the most popular stage could have 40,000 people around it, right? So it's kind of... it's kind of crazy logistically, and it got into the afternoon. It was very hard to get from point A to point B.
Right.
Early in the day was great because the crowds just hadn't gotten there yet.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what was nice about Pitchfork is you could kind of stake out one place and, you know, be pointed at the band and hear the show, and then when that's over, you just kind of pivot, you know, a little 45-degree turn, and then you're looking at another stage. They've got it coordinated so well that, you know. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
I like that idea of going to music with your son. Like, as you guys know, my son Fox he's two now. So you know, when he's 15, I'll be in my mid-50s, which is crazy to think. I'm almost 40 now.
It'll be
kind of a nice idea.
Yeah, you'll be going to see Kim Gordon's daughter's band or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It'll be the new version of Kiss, but it's got all of the original Kiss members' children playing,
right?
Yeah,
or as Kiss or something like that.
Yeah, Dinosaur Jr.
right. Jay Maskus's kid, he'll have, like, with long gray hair at age 19.
Dinosaur the Third.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see where that goes. I'm sure you play lots of cutting edge music around him, so he's going to develop a taste, hopefully. But you never know. You just don't know how kids are going to turn out. You know,
that's true.
Well, okay, that's the music news, and now it's time for a live report from Nicholas.
We can't do this right now, but we need some kind of theme music.
Yeah, there should be. But you can't just say that, can you? It's just totally unprofessional. Maybe I can find some. Here, let's get some. Well, why don't we just use this?
There was some bit of music that you accidentally played at the end of the last podcast. Remember you played it just spontaneously, and then you were saying, hey, maybe this should be the closing thing. And I was going to say, I really liked it.
It was completely accidental. I can't even remember what it is now. I got to go find it.
There was an accident occurred on the podcast?
That's probably the only time that's ever happened. Huh. How about this?
Very odd.
Let's try this. Now it's time for the live report of the week.
I feel like I should be running down the road with the microphone. Hey, let's, everybody!
Right. We should take another step.
Nicholas coming in. The live report.
Should we try another one?
That's option A. We'll put that in the maybe pile.
Okay. Well, there's always this one. But that's sort of a news one.
Right, yeah. This is more of a feature type thing.
Oh, sorry, Will. I've got to say, I've never liked that bit of... it's terrible. It reminds me of like something from 1985.
Yeah.
And those drums.
it is.
Please, whatever you do, please.
Yeah, that's 80s drums, isn't it?
Yeah, you can... Come on, you can do better than that.
Okay, I'm going to make one more try here. I can't do it. I was going to try to look up something, but I can't do it. Okay.
Look, they've all got their own charm, Will. Don't get me wrong.
I'll try to update some of these. They need some work. So
I did go and see Jay Maskus playing just a couple of nights ago here in Melbourne. So he's sort of on a world tour, really, in a way. He seems to have been... I've seen some little updates, and he's been touring around, and now he's in Australia, and it's the first time I've seen Jay Maskus play. I'd never seen Dinosaur Jr. They came out here a couple of years ago, but I actually had a ticket, and then I couldn't make it to the gig. And he came out on his own, maybe around the same time, about 2 years ago. So I was really excited to finally go and see him play. And he was awesome. He was great. He was great for heaps of different reasons. I guess there's lots of things I want to sort of mention about the gig. It was at a, he's an incredible guitar player. He just basically kind of like mopes out onto stage, sits down. He didn't have a band or anything. It was just him sitting down with a couple of acoustic guitars. And, you know, he just plays. You know, he said about sort of like four words, I think, for the entire gig. Between songs. So that wasn't really a surprise. But, he just kind of comes out and kicks ass, really. Halfway through the gig, I sort of took a moment to think about his voice. And it was really good. In a way, I was kind of... I didn't really notice it at first because it was so... when you've been listening to a band heaps and then you hear it live, it's sort of really familiar. So it was just this awesome familiar voice. But then after a while I was thinking, wow, his voice is actually really strong. And I was surprised at how in tune he was, because I kind of got the impression that maybe when you listen to him, maybe he's one of these guys who has to record something 20 times to pick the version that he doesn't sort of hit a bung note on. But he's actually a really, really good singer. So I was surprised at how... I'm just checking. You guys aren't saying anything. I'm not even... Oh, my God. This is... Are you guys still there?
Yeah. It's all yours. You could have kept going for like an hour. This is an extensive report.
Hang on. I've dropped out. I'm just sitting here talking to no one about it. Crazy. His voice sounded great. I was kind of surprised at how good his voice sounded live. Because when he does that falsetto thing, it's quite sort of delicate. And I was just sort of surprised at how strong his voice was live. Anyway, I've said that about 10 times.
There probably that is interesting, because some artists or singers have to record like 20 times to get a good take. And then others, they're on all the time.
Yeah.
And I can see that about his voice, where you wouldn't be sure. What kind of a venue was it at?
What kind of venue?
Yeah.
Well, it was quite a sort of a fancy venue. It was a place called the Melbourne Recital Centre, which, as the kind of name suggests, it's more like it's this really sort of fancy, new kind of architecturally designed venue that opened just in the last few years. It's mainly kind of a classical venue, I suppose, although they do have a whole range of different stuff. It's not like it's just the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra that plays there, a whole lot of different artists. But it's it's definitely a kind of a fancy venue, with big kind of theatre curtains that go way up to the ceiling behind, at the back of the stage, and very kind of fancy. So I was sort of thinking, at what point do these kind of like, 90s grunge artists become sort of like almost black tie kind of events? And, a couple of years ago, Steve Albini's band Shellac were invited to sort of like headline the Melbourne Festival, which was, this quite, again, fancy sort of art and music sort of, festival that happens over a couple of weeks. And, in my mind, I'm like, wasn't it 1995 was only a few years ago, and all these bands were just playing in sort of like, crappy pubs in Melbourne and that sort of thing. And then suddenly it's 2015 and you're sitting in these sort of like nice, comfortable theatre seats watching Jay Maskus, the guy from Dinosaur Jr., play on stage. And I just think it's a kind of a curious thing. And I remember asking a friend of mine, when does this sort of shift occur, from these sort of like dirty grunge people to becoming these, expensive ticket sort of acts. And he was saying, oh, it's just, the people that are organising, the festivals or the events, they're now in their 40s. So, 20 years ago, they were into these artists. And I thought, maybe that's kind of what it is, as the the fans of these bands age, so does their sort of, not exactly their image, but, the little kind of segment that these people fit into. I don't know. Am I making any sense?
Yeah, you are. For me, a lot of times, if I'm kind of on the fence about somebody, if it's in a place like, I don't really feel like standing up the whole time. So if you can sit down in a nice, comfortable theater seat, that's a selling point for a certain segment of the rock population. That'd be the older segment.
Yeah, and Grant, he doesn't like seeing bands in sit-down venues at all.
Yeah.
Because he wants to just walk up to the front, of course, which is what he always does. Yep.
Yeah, look, it was actually really, really awesome because, this space has been, like, acoustically designed, and all the walls have got all these special, panels and, like, shapes cut out of the wall to make it sound perfect. So to sit and watch an acoustic, essentially an acoustic kind of performance, it sounded beautiful, so it was a treat, really. And yeah, I mean, it's nice to have you've got your seat there and you can just sit down and enjoy it. It was great. Having said that, this really kind of like weird thing happened, which was, everyone kind of like walked in, took their seat. And as I was sort of sitting there, and I had a pretty good seat, we were sitting maybe four or five rows back from the front. And I was thinking, oh God, he's got a music stand like right there. And so he had this big music stand, sitting right in front of the chair where he was sitting. Just off to one side, but almost in the middle. And so he came and sat down. And as soon as he sat down, all of us in particularly that sort of section of the audience suddenly realized, oh, we can't see him. And so I could just see basically the top of his head poking over the top of this music stand. And unfortunately, it was also kind of obscuring his hand that he was playing his guitar with, and then I could sort of see the rest of his body. So this big sort of section was literally blacked out by this music stand that was in front of him. So half the people from a couple of rows in front of me actually got up from their seats and sort of like, moved out to the end of the aisle and stood against the wall so that they could sort of see him from another angle. Luckily, I could kind of, two-thirds of his face I could see, but a lot of the time only half of it. So it was kind of a bit weird, and it took me a bit of mental strength to, have you ever been at a concert and, like, something's just annoying you about the concert or the person that's standing in front of you or the pillar that's in front of the bass player or whatever, and it's really hard to, like, concentrate on just enjoying the music because you've got this thing that's kind of, like, interrupting your your enjoyment of the gig. So anyway, I was kind of in my mind, I was going, forget about the music stand, forget about the music stand, just enjoy the gig.
So you adjusted after a while, huh?
I adjusted after a while.
That's what it's like going to a concert with Chris, by the way. You know, you've got to get over the fact that you're there with Chris and just try to enjoy the music.
Yeah.
But I'm also not sure when having a music stand on stage also became okay, because I reckon that's kind of not okay. And I remember, like, back in the 90s when Guns N' Roses were on this big world tour, there's this big thing about, you know, Axl Rose having teleprompters, like a newsreader, with the lyrics on stage. It's like a little television screen on the bottom of the stage. And you know, since then I've seen, like, I remember seeing a picture of Sting doing some hoity-toity kind of solo performance where he's standing there and he's got the music stand in front of him and a little table with his little towel and bottle of water or something like that.
Yeah.
And, I'm not sure when that, you know, when that became okay, that you pay for a ticket and your artist actually has his song, literally his songbook in front of him, and he's reading the lyrics. You know, I reckon that's not necessarily cool, because imagine if you went to see... I'm always talking about Kiss, but imagine if you went to see Kiss, yeah, and they're all jumping around, but Paul Stanley's got a music stand in front of him. I mean, it would be ridiculous.
Yeah, that's just not rock and roll at all. But maybe if he figures if he's already sitting down and he's in this fancy venue, then the music stand just fits the scene. Okay, he must be thinking that, right? Because if he was playing with Dinosaur Jr., he wouldn't have a music stand, right?
Well, there you go. That's a good point. So yeah, why the hell does he need it now? And it would have been great if there had been a conductor in a sort of full black, you know, pair of, you know, set of tails, you know, tapping his little baton, keeping Jay Maskus in time.
Yeah, sometimes when you see a rock band, the singer, like, they'll play an encore or something, and they'll be like, oh, sorry, this is the first time we've played this. And he'll pick up a piece of paper with a, you know, lyrics scribbled out on with a magic marker or something. Mm-hmm. But that's the closest thing that, like, a real rock band would do to a music stand, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, there were some amazing musical moments in the gig. And, I mean, I was sort of surprised. He only actually did a few songs from his last couple of solo albums. So I did quite a few Dinosaur Jr. songs. And, you know, I can kind of tell by the looks on other people's faces, oh, this is an early Dinosaur Jr. song that I don't know, but they all know it, so this is obviously a classic. But he did a couple of great covers. He did Fade Into You by Mazzy Star.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, it was really cool. And then he ended with, I believe it was Just Like Heaven by The Cure.
Oh, I think Dinosaur Jr. played a cover of that. I remember that, okay. Yeah. Yep.
Because you know when you hear a song and it's like, oh, what's that song? Oh, I can't remember. Is that? And I was getting it mixed up with Boys Don't Cry by The Cure, and then I was listening to that and I was thinking, no, it's not that. Maybe it's actually a Dinosaur Jr. song that I'm getting it mixed up with and I don't know it. And I was thinking, I'm going to be going on the podcast. I want to look, you know, I want to seem like I know what I'm talking about, but I'm going to be talking about the final song that he played, and maybe it was The Cure song, but I'm pretty sure it was... Just Like Heaven by The Cure. So he did an awesome version of that. And look, I've got to say, it made me think. I know this is an idea that you'd normally discuss off air, but it made me think. This is my suggestion to you guys, that you guys do a Cure special where you all go away and listen to different Cure albums and come back and compare notes. Because when I was listening to a few Cure songs over the last day, I was thinking, this is a band that obviously millions of people love, lots of people were influenced by. But I reckon they're definitely one of these bands you can go back and listen to their albums and kind of realize, oh my God, this band was incredible. And they did lots of albums that sounded quite different from each other. And they've got, you know, lots of kind of much more jangly, kind of poppy, kind of upbeat songs. But then they've got other much darker material, and, you know, albums where they had these sort of more sort of synthy and electronic, you know, like electro drum, you know, drum machine kind of sounds, and, you know, some awesome guitar stuff. Yeah, anyway, that was just an idea that I thought I'd put to you guys. Do a Cure special, that would be cool.
I think they were on our list, weren't they, Barrett? We haven't done one in about a year, but we did a few of those, like our top five songs by a certain band or something, right?
Yeah, we've done the Jam.
Yep.
The Go-Betweens.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Well, we did the ridiculous REM special.
Right.
Yeah, and you did the Beatles special, didn't you? You did a Beatles special.
I think we did do a Beatles one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. There's at least one. Did we do the Smiths? Did we rank our top songs by the Smiths?
I think so.
I think we did. So, yeah, The Cure is a good one. I think we should do that.
I just wanted to quickly talk about Jay Mascis's guitar pedals.
So you have pedals with acoustics?
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. It's kind of over the top, and it's kind of what makes him awesome. So he's sitting there. He's got like a big kind of like a full-bodied Gibson acoustic guitar. You know, it's halfway through the song, bam, hits his fuzz pedal and does just a full-on like fuzz guitar solo in the Jay Mascis style that we all know and love. And like, so he's there like, yeah, frying our brains with his fuzz pedal, with his guitar, you know, acoustic guitar going through it. And then he'll like click it off and then back into strumming the chords. And then he did this amazing thing with a loop pedal. He's obviously got a loop pedal, and you guys might be familiar with a loop pedal, and some of your listeners, basically a guitar pedal, so you can play something, so you can go jingy, 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 click, and it'll basically record what you've played, and then it'll kind of instantly play it back. So then you can sort of play over the top, you can play something over the top of that loop that you've created. So he was doing this as he was playing the song. So he'd start the song, play the chords for the verse, hit his loop pedal, it would have recorded that, and then he's instantly into a guitar solo over the top of it, and then he'll click off the loop pedal back into the verse. Anyway, it kind of sounds a little bit complicated, and it actually is. It's quite kind of tricky to always get it in time. You've got to really hit it right on the beat so that when it comes around again, you're in time with yourself. Does that kind of make sense, what I'm saying?
It does to me, because I hear it up almost every day in my house, because Grant is totally into that whole deal.
Yeah.
He'll play the loops and then he drums to them, and he's gotten really good at it. But yeah, you have to hit the pedal at like exactly the right time to get the timing right.
That's right. If you're a little bit off, you'll suddenly be out of time with yourself. And so Jay was doing this the whole time in lots of different songs, setting up these loops as he was playing and doing a solo and then turning the loop off. So it was really cool to hear all these, you know, awesome and sometimes over the top guitar effect pedals. My partner Finley, who's not a guitar player, was like, "Oh, I like his electric guitar pedal." And I was saying, "What's an electric guitar pedal?" And she's like, "Oh, it's a pedal that turns your acoustic guitar into an electric guitar." And I thought, yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Sort of true, I guess, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it was lots of fun, and he kicked ass, and it's great to see him in a nice swanky venue, and we love Jay, and I love him a bit more. I mean, he's an amazing guitar player, and you know, you just get the sense that this guy sits and plays guitar a lot. You know, it's almost like watching someone just like write their name on a piece of paper. You know, the ease that he does it with, and the ease that his fingers kind of like flow over his guitar. You know, he's just totally at ease. So it's quite a pleasure to kind of watch someone play with such ease.
Yeah, great. That's a lot higher caliber live report than we usually give, right? Whereas you're like, yeah, they were pretty good.
Yeah, it was good. I had two beers. There's this guy.
That's a lovely way of saying to me that I've crapped on for a really long time. And look, I'm sorry, there's no more time. That's the end of this week's episode of this, you know, Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Nicholas is like the New York Times level of reporting, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's still somewhat of a novelty. And for reasons that are unclear to me, he thinks it's kind of a big deal to be on the podcast. And that's great. That makes me happy. But like, after doing 275 of these or whatever, like, it's tough to put in the level of detailed preparation that Nicholas brings. It's very impressive.
I love you guys so much. I love what you're saying. It's just, you just make me laugh. You guys just make me laugh.
Well. now, what I do mean that, and that, you know, it's kind of, I was talking to Will about this last night. It's almost intimidating to have someone that's so well prepared on the podcast.
We need to get some correspondents who are not any good, right? so that we sound better by comparison. And then
Fox be so our funny. Backup Melbourne correspondent, because I think that we'd blow him out of the water.
Like yeah,
our musical knowledge.
Yep. Fox doesn't know nearly as much about like 60s rock as Barrett does. So it would make us sound
That's right.
Better.
That's right. But we could get Fox on. You could play him a piece of music, and his response would be drums.
Maybe that's what he would have said if he went to see Jay Maskus. Needs some drums, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
See, that's the thing. Yeah. When I see a band or performer in that context, I do find myself saying, God, I wish they had a full band. But but when, you know, when he does the stuff with the loops and stuff, it probably keeps it interesting enough, right? That probably sort of saves it. Like, just a guy playing a guitar, I have a hard time holding my attention.
Yeah. I think that I love guitar so much. I kind of like being able to just focus on that in a way. I was never really pining for a drummer. I was more just pining for someone to walk on stage and take away his music stand.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, that was great. So, yeah, we're going to keep the podcast going, even though Nicholas has already given the listeners their $0 worth already, but we're going to just keep going. So I thought this would be a good opportunity to talk about a couple Australian bands, since we have an Australian on the podcast. So The Church, they've been around for over 30 years, because Barrett and I know this because we saw the 30th anniversary tour about, what, it's probably 3 years ago now, right?
Yeah, it sounds about right. So, and 33 years, that's a long time.
Right. And the 30th anniversary tour, didn't they play like one song from every album and start with the earliest one? And it was like, you know, 23 albums.
Did they announce that they were doing that, or did you just realize it? Because I wouldn't have realized.
Yeah, I think they announced it. I wouldn't have. I don't know the albums that well, but I think that's what the theme was.
That would make sense.
It was pretty cool.
That would be a good way to present that show.
Yeah. So, well, they have a new album out called Further Deeper, and it came out, I think it came out in Australia like last October, and for whatever reason they didn't release it to the rest of us until this month. And it's, you know, The Church used to be a kind of a psychedelic pop type band where they had three and a half minute catchy songs with a little bit of a, I don't know, psychedelic bent maybe. And then a few albums in, they kind of slowed down and became this kind of sprawling, really atmospheric and not as catchy type band. And I think they're still kind of like that. They're still kind of like the second period Church, which I don't like quite as much as the earlier stuff. But there's enough on this new album that I thought it was worth talking about. It's really long, but there's some catchy stuff on it. So I'm going to start us out with a song called Pride Before a Fall.
Quiet, you go.
That's the church, rock veterans.
Yeah, you know, again, last night I was talking to Will, and I had a difficult time with this album. It's all catchy and lushly produced, and you know, it sounds nice, but I don't know. I think they're just so good at being the church that they can just keep making these albums that, like, here's another one that's much like the last one. And I don't know, there just wasn't enough to really kind of pull me in. I just felt it lacked interest. It's just not interesting to me at all.
Nicholas, got anything to say?
I had an almost identical experience to you, Barrett. And I did, I mean, I think the bottom line for me was that I didn't really like this album, which is kind of a shame because I'm actually, I really love The Church. And again, they're a band who I sort of got into, you know, years after most people got into them. But I think they're, you know, they put out heaps of awesome albums in the last, I mean, their biggest album was in the late 80s. But since then, you know, in the sort of 90s and the early 2000s, they did some awesome albums with, that I thought were incredible. And yeah, this album, as well as their last album, it could never really keep me coming back to it, I suppose. I actually bought this album so that I could listen to it properly. And I think I kind of felt like I liked, there'd be a song would start and it'd be like, oh, that sounds good. I like this chord. I like this chord. And then we'd go to the third chord, you know, some sort of like the second chord change. And it's like, maybe I don't really like this song that much. And I kind of felt like it was like that through the whole album. I mean, I've written down some songs that I liked, but it was kind of like I disliked them less than the other songs that I dislike even more. So it's kind of a shame because I do really love them. There's also been a lineup change that always makes me go, ugh.
Right, the guitar player.
I feel kind of self-conscious about being over-prepared for the podcast now, but it's the only bit of preparation that I did.
I hope I didn't use the word over-prepared. I was contrasting you with me. I'm under-prepared. That doesn't make you over-prepared. You can be properly prepared, which is what I think that you are.
But of course, Marty Wilson Piper was the longtime guitar player. And yeah, all they said was he was unavailable for this album and like the latest tour.
And I read a little interview with Steve Kilby, the main guy in the church, who said that Marty Wilson Piper basically moved to Sweden. And when they decided they were going to do a new album, Steve Kilby was like emailing him and calling him. And he never heard back from him. Like, he was trying to contact him for 6 months.
That's weird.
And he basically never heard back from him, so they just had to go ahead and get a new guitar player. I always just makes me wonder, wow, so, you know, this guy in the church, he just moved to Sweden and decides, yeah, you know, I don't really want to be in the church anymore. And, Steve Kilby's contacting me to write a new album and do another world tour, but, yeah, maybe I'll just stay here in Sweden and, maybe I won't even return his emails. Like, it's kind of weird, don't you think?
It's very strange. But but you don't know, like, when people have known each other for 30 years, it's just weird stuff goes on.
Yeah.
Think of the emails between Mick Jagger and Keith Richards. You know, probably kind of weird, too. But maybe they wouldn't respond for 6 months. Who knows? I don't know. It's weird. Yeah. Well, obviously, you guys have made your opinions known on this. And I'm not giving this a super endorsement. I kind of had to, like, consciously try to like it. But... but I ended up with like liking half of it pretty reasonably, and I have liked them for a long time, and I do think that Steve Kilby is one of the really great underrated voices of rock and roll. So sure. I'm gonna play at least one more. Let me have one more. Can I have one more?
I had a pick as well. So, but you know, I know that I've been talking a lot, so you might just want to keep moving on. But yeah, have another pick.
No, you should make a pick then, and then I'll make another one.
I was gonna go with Old Coast Road.
Sun coming down on my shoulder, moon going down in the sea. I knew nothing could hold her. It took everything from me. We drove into the sea.
Yeah, I also like that one. Well, how did you put it?
You that just like it less?
Yeah. There are definitely worse ones.
That one sounds more like some of the older stuff, doesn't it? I think. Yeah. It has a little... I do think that someone should tell Steve Kilby to just speed everything up like 33% and you know, just stick to the catchy chord progressions and... They could do it. But, yeah. Okay. One more. I'm going to play Laurel Canyon. There you go, The Church. You know, I kind of wish that I liked this more, because if I really loved it, then I could really, like, do battle with you guys like Siskel and Ebert, you know? I could say, you could not be more wrong, you know? But I think we're too agreeable, even when we disagree. We're right. Really respectfully, you know, disagreeing. Right. I'm going to give it a 6.7 on the Pitchfork scale. And I think you guys are going to be probably lower than that.
Yeah, I think it's worth exploring, and I did listen to it lots, and you know, I think they kind of said themselves that they were sort of trying to push the boundaries of what the Church was, and I think there's a lot sort of going on musically, so that can be interesting just to kind of explore as a listener, really, just try to dive in and find things for yourself.
All right, that's it. That's all we have to say about the new Church album. So. there's this other band called Nightfields, and I found them. They, you know, it's just, I think a couple weeks ago, there just weren't that many new releases, so I was looking through all the new releases, and this was one of them. And it turns out to be this Australian band that's kind of gloomy, and I thought, yeah, that sounds pretty decent. Australian and gloomy. It's a little uneven, but it's pretty decent, I think. It's Nightfields, and Night is spelled N-I-T-E, for all of you Googlers out there. And, yeah, should I just play a track? Does anybody want to say anything before that?
Play a track, and then I'll spoil it for the listeners.
Okay. Nicholas, he's holding back. He's got info here. Yeah, I think this album really has a standout track, and that's track 3, which is called You I Never Knew. Nightfields.
I like this more than I'd like The Church. To me, it sounded like a couple of different things. This one sounding like more of the Cure side of this band, and a lot of the rest of it, I think, sounds like Joy Division. So
yeah, it's fair enough.
Yeah, so
it's gloom.
It is gloomy.
All right, what's Nicholas going to say about this?
These guys, so I'd never heard of them. I looked them up. They're from Brisbane. So Brisbane is the capital city of Queensland, which is on the sort of the sunny part of Australia, and not all of Australia is sunny. So it's way up north on the east coast. So it's beautiful, you know, rivers and beaches, and people go there for holidays. And so it's kind of curious that their music sounds more like music that would probably come out of Melbourne, where we are down here in the you know, with gloomy kind of wet long winters. So they're up from the sunny part of Australia, and they make music that sounds like that. Yeah,
it's not
so,
sunny pop.
Yeah, sorry, go on.
They, I guess they need a counter to the yeah. happy sunny stuff.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. I really like that song. It's funny. You know, I wrote down 2 songs, and that was one of them. And I listened through this album 2 or 3 times. So it's funny that you picked that out as being the standout track, because yeah, that was one of the 2 songs that I liked as well. Yeah, so definitely, like you were saying, Barrett, you know, The Cure, I can hear The Cure in there. I can kind of hear The Church, you know, early Church in there as well. So, I don't know, he's very mournful. Mournful, though, you know, the singer. I was, you know, I'd be riding right. to work listening to this album, and after a while I'd be like, I've just got to stop this because I'm starting to have a bad time just listening to it. Like, why are you so depressed? Come on. You're so mournful. Oh, God. Stop being so mournful.
Yeah, it is a little bit like that.
But, you know, that's okay. Some people like that. Some people like mournful music.
I'm going to guess you're going to make a pick. It's probably going to be one that I would have picked too. I think we're tracking on this.
Yeah. Well, I've written down Pay for Strangers, and is that an instrumental, a short instrumental track?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Is that the other? Yeah, okay.
Let's play it.
Anyway, I liked it, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. I think I'm someone that likes kind of mournful music, you know. And that, you know, if I have an internal metronome, it's set about at that speed, at that tempo. So, you know, I connect with that. You know?
I don't know why that's funny, Barry, but that's really funny.
I wish I could turn it up sometimes.
Because you talk about, you know, you like coffee, you go on half marathons, but then you've got this really slow internal metronome. That's just really funny.
Well,
it's all part of the complexity that is Barry. Right. He's not a one-dimensional complex guy at all.
No, definitely two-dimensional.
He's two-dimensional, yeah.
I love all two dimensions of you, Barrett.
Good. Well, that's touching is what that is.
So, Barrett, you got a pick on this album?
I do. I've got two songs. I'm not sure which one to play. So I'm going to... I'll go with one of the later songs on this. Pretty short album. It's only about... How long is it? Just over half an hour.
34, yeah.
Which is a good thing, I think, generally. But song Prescription.
You wanna put me down, you wanna raise a
You know, it does have a little 80s influence, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what I like about it, because I have my roots in some 80s gloomy, what were called new wave bands, right?
And it's got a little jangle to it, which is a very 80s kind of a sound. And on that one, I like the, it's kind of a bouncy little guitar that, you know, contrasts everything else that's going on in the song, which is pretty dour.
Yep.
But, yeah.
The singer reminds me of another singer, and this is going to be an obscure reference, but there's a band that Grant really likes a lot from Indiana called Stagnant Pools, and the singer sounds similar. So if you like that kind of near monotone kind of singing, the I think the Stagnant Pools guy is even more monotone. It's the same kind of tone, though. So, you know, and those guys, just a little anecdote. We went to see them in a small venue about a year and a half ago, and we were talking to them afterwards, and it's two brothers, and they, you know, they play this gloomy style music, you know, and then you wonder, like, what kind of guys are these guys going to be? And they're just totally normal, nice guys. Hey, how you doing? You know, so I remember when I was in college, a friend of mine, this goes back to The Cure now, a friend of mine was working at a college radio station, and he had a chance to interview Robert Smith from The Cure, and he was scared. He just said, like, this guy's going to be, he's like, this guy, it was like probably right in the middle of the, like, Pornography album. Remember that, like, when The Cure was at their gloomiest, and he's like, this guy's just going to be too intensely gloomy. I can't take it.
So, how did he turn out to be?
He didn't do it.
He didn't do it. Okay.
No, he just, he actually just said, nah, I'm not doing it.
Wow. Well.
Yeah. So I think most people.
I must say, I love the band name Stagnant Pools. I mean, that's.
Right. Yeah. It's not,
really,
pretty,
yeah.
It's a pretty gloomy name, isn't it? Yeah.
They probably don't sound anything like the Beach Boys, do they?
No. No. They don't. Yeah. That's funny when the name implies something. A lot more often, the name is intended to not imply anything, you know, the arbitrary band name. But sometimes they are going for something. Yep. All right. I think we covered a lot. And are there any other comments or things the listeners need to hear this week?
I just want to thank you guys for letting me come on again. I was making that analogy of like being like the salesman who's got his foot in the door. I feel like I'm more the kind of like, you know, the friend of a friend who like popped over once for a cup of tea. And it's like, oh, yeah, nice to see you. See you later. And then like, you know, very next week it's like, hey, guys. Guys, can I come in for another cup of tea? Come on, guys. I've got some biscuits as well. Let me in. Come on. Hey, let's all sit around and have another cup of tea together. And then next week I'll come back and we'll do it all again. Yeah, you guys like me, don't you? I'm your best friend now.
Right. After we're done recording, Baird and I are going to say to each other, like, what do we do now? Like,
right.
He's expecting us to let him come on again. Like, how do we deal with this?
Well, this is a good segue into what I had to say. And that is that Will's band of the week. This is it. We're done.
This is the last episode.
This is the last episode. So
now
nobody needs to look for it anymore. You should probably take it off of your podcast subscriptions and, yep.
Yeah, and
so
and
that would be
and that's
include
kind of my
you.
Style. I kind of like wade. I just kind of wade into a situation, kind of like boozy here and there, boozy, you know. And then I just kind of ruin it, and then I just kind of like walk.
It's a conspiracy. He's gonna destroy the podcast and then leave. All right. Let's say goodnight or good morning or whatever it is wherever you are. We'll talk to you again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
You can subscribe to the Will's Band of the Week podcast using iTunes or any other podcast app. All of our podcasts are also available directly on our webpage, willsband.net. You can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on Twitter at Will's Band. The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you every week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.